This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The friends Nolan Wells went to Horn Island with came back without him. And when the sheriff of Jackson County, Mississippi, was asked how an 18-year-old ends up alone on an uninhabited island about 10 miles off into the Gulf, the answer was that the young man had chosen to stay. From what we understand, Sheriff John Ledbetter said he chose to stay there. That's, as of this recording, the official explanation. He chose to stay. This was a young man who graduated from Ocean Springs High School and went to play college football as a wide receiver. He appeared to be the only person of color in the photograph of that boat trip, the one that's traveled everywhere since. And the story is that he chose to stay behind alone on an island with no houses and no way back except the boat that had already left. There's one document that could tell us how Nolan Wells actually ended up in the water. It's the autopsy. The state has finished it, and the cause of death and the toxicology haven't been released yet. That is still ongoing, at least as of this recording. So follow the logic, because it matters. The people who've already decided this was murder don't have an autopsy. The people who've already decided this was a simple drowning and that everyone else needs to calm down don't have an autopsy either. Nobody arguing about how Nolan Wells died actually knows how Nolan Wells died. A single piece of paper that answers the question is sitting sealed or is not yet even completed, and the verdicts are coming in anyway from both angles. The outline of what happened is just about all anyone has. So let's start there. On the 4th of July, Nolan Wells went out on a boat with a group of friends to Horn Island, an undeveloped barrier island about 10 miles off the Mississippi coast, south of Ocean Springs. People go there for the beaches on the northwest tip. The group of friends there that he went with, they all went and had fun. He didn't come back on the boat with them after the fun, though, allegedly. He was reported missing. And after a search by local, state, and federal teams and a lot of volunteers, a park ranger found his body on July 6 off that same northwest tip of the island. When the official account of a death is that thin, he chose to stay. We're looking into it. People don't wait for more. They build their own account. And in this case, they've built two of them, and the two are now at war with each other. This take and that take. Before any of that, though, is a fact that has nothing to do with race and everything to do with competence. A friend of Nolan's called the Coast Guard around 11 o'clock on the night of the 4th. The people whose job it was to send the boats and the aircraft, well, they got around to asking them around lunch next day to go on out. Hey, you know, we got that call late last night. Maybe we should go look. Roughly 13 hours with a teenager missing on an island in open water in the dark. And the machine that's supposed to move didn't move. So there's that nugget over here. That delay is where the vacuum comes in. This is the same fight that breaks out every time a body turns up and the answers don't come fast enough. When a system is slow and a system is quiet, people don't read that as neutral. They read it as a signal, and they pour a theory into silence because a theory feels better than a shrug. Look at the Nancy Guthrie case. The sheriff hasn't even said publicly whether the water off that part of the island is considered dangerous. A Google search will tell you that, though, and it is. Or whether swimmers are warned away from it. Why did he separate from the group? Why was he found without his phone? Every one of those blanks becomes proof of whatever you believed before you showed up. And the official language didn't help anything. Early on, the sheriff's office put out a statement saying no foul play was suspected. That very one phrase did more to fuel the cover-up theory than anything the friends said or didn't say, because the coroner had actually said something narrower, that there was no immediate obvious signs of trauma on the body, and then asked for a full state autopsy exactly because the circumstances were uncertain. Cross the T's, dot the I's. That's good. No obvious signs at first. first glance isn't the same as case closed. Nothing happened. No, it's, well, here's initially what we have, but we ain't done yet. But that's how no foul play landed. And once a phrase like that is loose, you don't get it back. There are two theories, and plenty of people want to be told the two camps behind them are the same. They are not. The camp looked at the photograph, looked at the geography, looked at the history of the state, and decided Nolan Wells was murdered. The other camp looked at the attorneys and the cameras and the marches and decided this was an ordinary accident and everyone should stop talking about it. Those two positions aren't mirror images of each other. One camp is demanding more investigation. The other camp is saying, demanding less, I guess you could say. And in Mississippi, of all places, demanding less scrutiny isn't the calm, sober, grown-up posture it imagines itself to be. The whole reason this death carries the weight it carries is this is the state that has a long documented record of looking away from details exactly like this one. So the crowd insisting there's nothing to see here, move along, isn't the neutral party in the room. It's the crowd repeating the oldest mistake the state has ever made. And the questions the family is asking aren't manufactured. Crump has pointed out that Nolan knew how to swim. And he was a conditioned athlete. One of the volunteer searchers from the group called the United Cajun Navy said out loud what a lot of people are thinking. If a strong young man got into trouble in that water, how did the people around him not notice? And they're fair questions. They don't prove anybody did anything, but they're exactly the kind of questions the everyone calm down camp keeps trying to bat away. And questions like that don't just disappear because they're inconvenient. Although it is important to note, you can be Superman. And if you get caught in a riptide, and there appears to be a lot of them by this island, it is the ocean, it'll take you. It don't care what color your skin is. It don't care how good of an athlete you are. It's a dangerous body of water, bar none. So context and simple facts like here's how riptides work are important to the conversation, not just someone's conjecture. He's a strong swimmer. Great. There's a riptide. He's also human. None of that means the ordinary explanation is impossible. On the Mississippi coast, boat trips out to those barrier islands are a completely normal way to spend a holiday. People swim there. Accidents in open water happen to strong swimmers, and they happen fast, and they happen all the time. And they happen quiet. Most drownings happen quiet. They don't happen, oh, God, he's out there in the water. They happen, hey, where's Nolan? That's how most drownings happen. If the autopsy comes back and says Nolan was drowned, that's not a cover story. It's not a betrayal. It's a fact, and it deserves the same respect as any other fact. The point isn't that one theory is right. The point is that neither side actually knows yet. And yet, earned distrust still isn't the same thing as a proven claim. Nolan's family has hired attorney Ben Crump, and Crump said publicly there was an altercation on that boat. That's an allegation. It hasn't been established as fact. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office has asked anyone who is near that tip of the island to hand over original unedited photos and videos, and specifically anything showing alleged altercations. Alleged. Nobody has shown the public an altercation. It's been described, and describing something isn't the same as proving it happened. And keep in mind, I will say this too about conspiracies or cover-ups. Very hard to keep one under wraps when you have a large group of people involved, a large group of teenagers who were drinking involved. The idea that they're all making a pact. Okay, nobody's going to say anything about our friend that they all loved and had grown up with, we'd just all be like, oh, okay, let's just not tell any. I mean, it'd be a hard sell in a movie. It's an even harder sell in reality. Could it be?
Sure.
Anything is a possibility. That's the point here. We just don't know. And when we just don't know, we like to fill in facts. We like to fill in facts. We like to fill in information, I should say, not facts. We like to fill in blanks where we think facts should be. Based on our history, based on the narratives that we believe, based on so many factors. So the place where the two camps actually meet isn't, in the beginning, equally wrong. One of them started from a reasonable place and one of them didn't. Both of them have done the identical thing. Both of them stopped looking. Both of them swapped out finding the answer for already having the answer. And in a case where the central fact, how this young man ended up in that water, is still genuinely unknown, the one thing nobody can afford to do is stop looking. Questions need to be asked. Which brings up the question sitting underneath it all. Why won't a big part of the country just accept the official reassurance? The commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety, Sean Tyndall, went on radio and said there's no indication there was anything regarding race in this. And he might be right, but a huge number of people, to answer that question, why won't people just accept that? There's a good damn reason for it. A huge number of people heard that sentence and didn't believe it for a second. That reaction isn't irrational. It's memory. In 1955, a 14-year-old man named Emmett Till was murdered in Mississippi. An all-white jury acquitted the two men who did it. After about an hour of deliberating, those men confessed to a magazine. The next year, shielded from a second trial by double jeopardy, and neither of them ever spent a single day in prison for it. And if that feels safely sealed off in the distant past, the United States Department of Justice didn't formally close the Emmett Till case until December of 2021. Yeah. Systematic racism is still alive and well. It's not 1960 anymore, but it took till 2021 for Mississippi to say, you know, In 1963, Medgar Evans, a civil rights leader, was shot in his own delivery, or in his own driveway in Jackson, in front of his family. His killer's fingerprint was on the rifle, and it still took 31 years and three trials before the state managed to convict the man. So there's a track record here. It's not crazy for people to be a little cautious about trusting authorities in Mississippi to do anything correctly when it comes to a case like this. That's not a ridiculous position to take. That's why the suspicion in the Wells case is reasonable. Even if it turns out unfounded, the suspicion is reasonable. It doesn't mean it's fact. It doesn't mean it's accurate. But it means more questions need to be asked and more questions need to be answered because of said history. And just saying, well, that was a long time ago. Move on. No. No. That's not how this game works. When a state spends decades proving it won't investigate the deaths of its black citizens with the same seriousness it brings to everybody else, it doesn't get the benefit of the doubt on day one. And there's a lot of things that are not adding up here. And that's the problem when you think about the history of Mississippi. And it's history. But history earns the question. It doesn't supply the answer. Emmett Till and Medgar Evans are the reason to investigate this death all the way to the bottom and let nobody quietly file it away in a drawer. They are not proof that these particular men, young men, did anything wrong to Nolan Wells. Taking a real and terrible history of injustice and using it to convict strangers you've never met before any evidence is in isn't the opposite of that history. It's the same shortcut wearing better clothes. It's deciding you already know based on the group a person belongs to. That's the exact machine that killed Emmett Till. And aiming it in a direction that feels righteous doesn't turn it into a different machine. Go back to those 13 hours for a second. A slow, indifferent response from a small county sheriff's office to a missing black teenager is a real thing and a damning thing. And it deserves to be looked at all on its own. But indifference isn't the same as a cover-up. A department that didn't hurry isn't automatically a department hiding a murder. And for what it's worth, the sheriff has said the investigation is active and ongoing. That is his that his people have done witness interviews, and they've been working with the FBI. The machine is moving. Collapsing those two ideas, treating slowness as proof of conspiracy, is exactly the move that lets people wave away the whole complaint, including the part of it that is completely legitimate. And that's what the loudest voices on both sides are doing in this case. They're not fighting for Nolan Wells. They're using him. Most of the people with the loudest verdicts have never set foot on Horn Island and never met Nolan Wells, the dead 18-year-old. Has now been turned into a stage for many. And the show is about who can be louder than the other side, who can plant a flag harder, who can win the point in front of an audience. Every ounce of energy that goes into being right on the internet is an ounce that doesn't go into the only thing that actually matters, which is figuring out what happened on that island. And it carries a cost that isn't theoretical. Reporting on the case says young people who were on Horn Island that day are scared to speak, scared that if they describe what they saw, they'll get investigated or hauled in front of cameras or cast as the villain in somebody's post, even if they're just describing really nothing of any note. The people most likely to actually know something are going quiet because the noise has made telling the truth feel dangerous. The louder this whole thing gets, the further the truth runs from everybody chasing it. One of Nolan's own friends said the thing out loud that half of the internet has forgotten how to say. He said, let the investigation happen and let the facts come out. If the facts show somebody hurt Nolan, he wants justice. If it turns out to be a tragic accident that somebody was too scared to speak up about, he still wants justice. Either way, he said, the facts are the only thing that settles it. That's a kid who lost his friend. And he's more clear-headed about this than the adults screaming at each other online. Which brings it back to that sealed autopsy. It is still sealed as of this recording. Crumpy said the family ordered a second independent autopsy of their own because they don't accept that Nolan drowned by accident. The results of that one haven't come back yet either. So the one piece of evidence that could settle this has quietly split again into two versions, and the public hasn't seen either one, and everybody's still certain. That's the whole sickness of this thing in a single picture. Total certainty stacked on top of a question that hasn't been answered. Don't build your house on quicksand. Underneath all of it is Nolan Wells, an actual person. The night before the boat trip, he cooked his family dinner. He made them salmon. And he left to spend the holiday weekend with his friends. He was a college athlete who, by every account from the people who knew him, had his whole life in front of him. His mother has asked more than once that any marches held in his name stay peaceful because she says that's who her son was. The district attorney has said she'll take the findings to a grand jury to decide whether anybody committed a crime. The only thing that honors him is the truth. And the truth is something you find, not something you decide. You don't get there from a photograph. You don't get there from a hunch about what people like that you would do. You don't get there from whichever segment or whichever thread made you angrier. You get there from an autopsy, from the toxicology, from the unedited video, from the witness, if they're ever allowed to speak without getting torn to pieces for it. His parents are asking for the same thing every loud voice out there claims to want: answers. They're standing in the middle of everybody else's certainty, and what they're really asking is for somebody to tell them what happened to their son. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation there, and we will continue to follow this case wherever it may go. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.